You know, I recently told my husband, you know, I think I'd want you to throw my ashes in Hawaii when I die.
You know, I wasn't thinking of cremation. This went dark really fast.
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
Well, welcome. Welcome back. Another episode of Story and Craft. It's Mark, and we're back together. If this is your very first episode, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate you stopping by. Today, great conversation with the very talented actor Megan Rath. And if you've listened to this show for a while, going back, a big fan. My kids, when they were growing up, loved the show Hawaii Five-0. And Megan Rath was a big part of it. So it was cool to sit down with her. She's got a new show on AMC. It is called The Audacity. She stars alongside Rob Corddry, who we just talked to not too long ago, and also Billy Magnuson. And if you go back to episode number 8, it's a long time ago, we spoke to him back, I believe it was almost exactly 4 years ago. It was April 26th, 2022. Also, we talk about Hawaii Five-0 and her days there. And coincidentally, the episode right before Billy's, episode number 7, we spoke with Beulah Quale, who was, of course, was her co-star in Hawaii Five-0. And that episode's from April 19th, 2022. Gosh, has it really been 4 years? Holy cow. It was a great conversation. Really enjoyed chatting with Megan. She is just was a blast. I really enjoyed it. And I know you will as well. Do me a favor, pop on over to your podcast app, open it up, make sure to follow Story and Craft because you get notified every time a new episode comes out. Make sure to like the show, leave a comment. That really helps folks to find the show and everything about the show you could possibly want to know, past guests, past episodes, just go to storyandcraftpod.com. We're on your favorite podcast app. We're on Substack also. Just go to storyandcraft.substack.com. And if you sign up there, you get an email as well every time a new episode comes out. Okay, let's get right after it. I really want to jump right into this conversation. Had a blast. Let's get to it because it's Megan Rath Day right here on Story and Craft.
Hello, hello, hello. Okay. Is this better in any way?
I think it's very doable, yeah.
Okay, he thinks it's doable if he cleans it up.
It's coming through the AirPods.
It is coming through the AirPods, confirmed. Thanks.
Yeah, I think you sound fantastic. I think you're great. You're great.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I love you.
So give him a hug for me.
They want. Tell they want. I'm too. Giving you a hug for that. He won't hug me back, but Mark says he loves you. Okay, but she can stay with
me. Well,
you.
Now that we've done that.
Guys, only 21 minutes later.
So how you doing, Megan?
I'm great. How are you? My husband and I are in a fight, but it's all good.
It's give him a hug for me. Tell him, you know, you know, it's all going to be okay. It's all going to be fine. You know, so where do y'all live? Y'all in the LA area or?
Yeah, we're in LA. We're in Studio City. How about you? Where are you calling from?
I am on a little island on the South Texas coast called South Padre. It is kind of known as a spring break destination. I've done the Southern California thing. I'm from Dallas. I was like, youngest kid graduated high school. I was like, where do I really want to be? I can remotely do this from anywhere. I like to be on the beach.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of going for that Jimmy Buffett tropical Mayberry vibe.
You know,
it's all your fault from when you're on Hawaii Five-0. I was like, okay, you know, I gotta tell you, by the way, my kids, they're jazzed. I'm speaking with you because that was our, during COVID, Hawaii Five-0 became our family show,
you know,
and then I talked to Beulah Quale a long time ago.
Oh, you did? Like, that's my brother. Yeah, I love him. Like, that's family.
He was, y'all came on the show right about the same time, right? Y'all
we
came
did,
on the
yeah.
same season. Okay.
We did.
You know what I saw the other, I was doing just a little bit of cursory looking around and I saw the show ended 6 years ago. I can't believe it's that long ago. Isn't that mind-boggling?
That shocks me. See, I never even really thought about that, but 6 years seems like, it feels like a lifetime ago, but yeah, I miss it so much.
How can you not miss shooting on Oahu? Of course, anybody that listens to this show for any span of time knows Hawaii Five-0 maybe will come up. It's any show my kids and I got into watching together, but I saw that as like, dude, how can you not love that of all the locations anywhere, you know, in the U.S., or technically U.S., because it's not continental U.S., but, you know, but it's still, it's like being in a whole different world. I'm like, what? Did you choose to live there or did you just go there when you were shooting?
Oh, no, we lived there. I lived there for like 10 months a year.
God, that's
yeah. Because we were, I mean, we were. I was pretty much filming every day, and so there were times where I would go, like if I had a stretch of time where, and then I'd hop back to LA. But you know, it's still like a 6-hour flight from LA. Like it's a big deal to get back, and so I stayed there. It is like the most special, beautiful place on earth, and it's like. We were so spoiled on that show because we got to see the island in a way that nobody got to see it, because we would go to a lot of the spots were very touristy, but you would never have an opportunity to see it without it being packed with people. And when we would film, they would shut everything down and clear these like beautiful beaches and special, you know, sacred places for us. And we got to just be there alone. And it was really unreal. I feel really lucky.
I have to ask you though. What was your favorite beach on the island? Because one of the things I love about Oahu, every beach, depending on where you are on the island, they're all different. You know, the sand is even different. But I got to know, what was your favorite beach? What was your favorite part of the island?
I loved this beach called Makapu. And I think that's on the east side of the island. And it's this, I could be wrong, but I think it's the east side. It's this little tiny beach. The water gets pretty rough. But it's so beautiful, and it was pretty close to where I was staying, which was close to our studios. And that was, I always told people to go to that one. And it was never crowded, sort of harder to find.
Lanikai was the other one.
That was what I was going to say too. But that one got really crowded, but it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. It has those islands, you know, deep in the water. It's so beautiful, so special.
But I have to ask you, what is your opinion of Spam Musubi?
It's not for me. I really, I tried. And you know, my character ate it a lot.
It's been a great chat. Got to go.
I don't know. Listen, I think it was a time in my life. I'm not saying now if I revisited it that I would feel the same way. I don't know. I'm open. But at the time, you know, wasn't my cup of tea.
You know, I got back and I taught myself how to make it. And I'm like, my kids love that and Loco Moco. But, you know, since we're Texans, we're still using ground beef for the locomotive. We use some chorizo sometimes, so we did like a little spin on it. But, oh, I love all the food that's just packed with cholesterol over there. It's just good, hearty eating. Yeah.
Yeah, they know how to do it.
Of course, I had to touch on that because I know, you know, at least one of my kids are going to ask me. So, you know, talk to her about Hawaii Five-O. And, you know, of course, the last shot of the show was you and Danny on a plane, right? Wasn't that the last shot y'all flying off somewhere?
Me and Danny, Scotty's character?
What? Anyway, hang on a second. So wait,
or was that?
No.
There was. Okay. I do remember a plane. I feel like.
Not Danny. Not. I'm sorry.
Beulah's character.
I'm trying to remember. Shit. Now I got to go rewatch the show. You
no,
know?
I think I feel like you're right. I feel like there was a plane. Was I on it? I'm not sure. I think.
No. You didn't have a relationship in the show with, what's his name? I try to remember her name. The Australian.
Scott Conn? Alex O'Loughlin.
Alex. Did y'all have a relationship in the show, or am I imagining this?
Like a romantic relationship?
Yeah.
I can't remember who he's. my like romantic storyline was with Beulah's character.
Never mind. Total brain fart. I'm sorry. No, scratch that. I may even edit that out because that's embarrassing. I know. I'm going to get
your
totally
kids are shaking their head at you right now.
Exactly. Well, my daughter is over at a cafe studying. You know, she's right now, so she's not even here to hear my
club.
But it was really. I tell you, it was a great show. I think as a procedural, it was just so spot on. You know, and it was just. I don't think there's probably been any better tourism effort, you know, for Hawaii than that show.
I know.
That and Lost. I think Lost was probably the other.
Yeah. I was a massive fan of Lost. And, we used a lot of the same locations and a lot of our crew is the same. So I loved hearing about, you know.
Well, I have to ask you, how did that come to you? How did that show, was it just an audition? Did somebody reach out and say, hey, we got this thing going on. Why do you want to do it? Or
yeah. You know, I feel like I had been offered a guest star on it years before I actually did it. And I didn't end up doing it. And then I had just finished doing a show and it came around again. I think I feel like I did have some relationship with Peter Lenkov, the creator, and where we, you know, we wanted to work together. And then I ended up reading for this character, and I actually like wasn't convinced that I was going to end up doing it, because I couldn't really picture myself living in Hawaii. I'm just like, is that what I'm doing right now? I'm just going to move to Hawaii? That just seems like kind of impossible. And then as the process went on, it all of a sudden I was on a plane. It happened pretty quick, to be honest. And I remember the first day I was there staying, you know, before they put me in a hotel before I found a place to live. And I remember going up the elevator, and the elevator was completely packed with tourists. And I had this moment of like, where am I? Like, this is what I'm doing. What? Like, and I sort of had a panic attack, but I got it together. And truly, I think
it wasn't kind of like surreal a little bit when you're going 100%. To a vacation destination to work.
Yeah, I was like, know? Like people were in the elevator with me with like their floaties and stuff, and I was like, what? I was so confused. But I, you know, I recently told my husband that, like, I said, I think I want you to throw my ashes in Hawaii when I die. That's how much I love it.
The funerals out there are just kind of so cool the way they do that. You know, thinking of cremation. God, this went dark really fast. No, I wasn't really thinking of cremation, but it's just kind of beautiful what they do. You know, I'm not a woo woo person, if you will, but there's some just, there's kind of like a magical vibe about the place. I don't know.
Really is. It's such a part of, I mean, it's a massive part of their culture, but you know, before we started any season two, they would have people come and bless the crew and bless the set. And it was just such a beautiful, you know, element to have in the background of doing this show.
You're from Canada originally, right?
I am, yeah.
So are you a cold weather or a warm weather person inherently?
I would love to tell you that I'm a cold weather person. And living in LA, I really do miss the seasons. But I'll tell you, when I go back to the East Coast of Canada, where I'm from, I can't survive there anymore. You really get used to the heat quick living in LA.
Yeah,
I can't even open my eyes outside and the East Coast of Canada anymore. I'm like such a wimp.
Where in Canada did you grow up?
I grew up in Montreal. So Montreal is a very different place than the rest of Canada. It looks very different, and the feel is very different because of the politics and language there. But yeah, my parents still live there. It's a very special place to me.
Did you come up in a creative family, or did your folks do something completely unrelated?
They did something unrelated. My mom was a dentist for 40 years. My dad was a CFO of a company and a lawyer. They didn't know anything about the industry. I didn't know anything about it either. I didn't know a single person who was in it. I didn't know that this could be a career. So we were all sort of starting from scratch. But my mom is an artist, and so I do come from a creative background. She's a painter and a prolific knitter. She's a maker of things. So it's in my blood.
So is your family French, like the whole French Canadian thing? Are they French descent, or did you, because I know Canada's kind of cool, because, you know, I lived in New Orleans for like 20 years, and I know there was a exodus down to New Orleans at some point in time from some folks in Canada, but I'm kind of curious, like, is that part of your lineage?
It's not. My dad's family for generations have lived in Montreal, but originally they were from Austria, but I think at that time it was part of Romania, and they're Jewish, but have roots in Canada. Well, my mom's family's from Goa, which is in the south of India, and she immigrated to Montreal, the oldest of five, when she was 13. So my parents are Anglophone, which is, you know, there's most of Quebec is French Canadian, but there's, you know, a big population of English speaking people.
Well, I'm glad to know you're at least you're half part of my tribe. That makes me happy. I'm not the Indian part, but
Jewish part. But okay. Yeah.
Clarifying there. But the food in your house must've been amazing. You know, you know, was your father observant? Did he like do the whole like Passover thing and all that? I think Passover with a little injection of Indian into it has got to be like pretty awesome.
yeah, it was great. We did. We celebrated both. My mom's family is Catholic, so we celebrated, you know, all the Catholic holidays and the Jewish holidays. But, you know, my dad loves to cook and learned from my mom's mother how to make Indian food. So my dad is actually like the Indian chef in the house. Yeah. And still makes it to this day. Comes and visits. And like, I always, you know, he makes me this special curry that I grew up eating. And now my kids are eating it. And it's, you know, like for him, a lot of cooking is tied to emotions and like remembering people. So it's special.
What a wonderful thing that is. You know, that's when I cook something, I, especially if you got the recipe from someone who's no longer with you, it's a connection, a tether to, you know, your past, you know, but
oh, yeah.
Indian, it's so challenging though. It's so specific. I mean, I love two things, saag paneer and alu gobi. That's the two things the bread. I go full, the naan, I go crazy on that, but I can't find it. Yeah. There's no good where I live right now. You got to drive at least an hour to get into, it's like the Texas Valley. It's there. Oh, you got it. But
yeah,
but it's so disappointing when you get it and it's not that great. You know, that feeling,
it's very disappointing.
It's like, you know, now you want it even more, you know, but so now when you're growing up in Montreal, which actually I have heard they have a real cool Jewish, they do like the bagels there are different and stuff like that. Oh, and it's kind of different. I need to get up there. But tell me, what was it like growing up there? Were you angling towards a creative endeavor when you were young, or was this kind of a later on in your childhood or early adulthood? You said, hey, I want to do the acting thing. How did it come about for you?
I mean, for as long as I can remember, I wanted to be an actress. And you know, I took the, you know, the little theater courses around in my area, you know, children's Shakespeare companies, and we did plays and stuff. But it was something I always wanted to do. And my parents put me into more serious acting classes as I was like a preteen. And
so they were supportive of the, and this was something they were behind you doing.
Yeah. I mean, of course, like they supported it, but never thought that I would seriously do it. I don't think, because it just didn't seem like something that could happen where we came from, but like, supported it. But you know, they're both very academic, and was very important for them that I went to university, which is like, not going to university is like a thing that could never, there was not a single person I knew in my life that didn't go that path. So I sort of got lucky when I was doing this acting class when I was, I think 12 or 13, a casting director who was casting for a movie that was shooting in Quebec came to the class, saw my picture on the wall, asked me to audition. And then I ended up getting it. So that was sort of the beginning. But then I finished high school and then really started full time when I was like, just when I was graduating. So I was 17.
You're sort of saying you were discovered a little bit. Somebody came, saw, was it a showcase that they saw you do, or, and they just said, yeah, hey, she's got chopped.
Yeah. I think it was something like, yeah, it was like some sort of showcase, but I was told that she saw my headshot on the wall, which of course was my school, but was not a real headshot.
As far as not just the acting thing, but were you globally like a creative kid? Was there art? Was there music? Was there singing? Or, you know, was there anything like that going on, or was it just theatrical type?
I was always interested in art. I was constantly drawing and painting. I played classical piano growing up as well. It's sort of a conservatory. Not to brag, and you would never know now because I cannot.
People can't see you, but you just hear it, not to brag, but you kind of flip the hair.
I know,
back
it sounds like such brag. A flex, but I promise you now, I could not, like, I do not play anywhere. I used to be able to sight read music, and I could never, ever do that now. There are a few songs that I can play strangely when I sit down at a piano, and if I don't think about it at all, my fingers just do it. And they just, it's like muscle memory completely. But the moment I start thinking about what I'm playing, I like just completely lose all sense of my body.
Isn't that acting's a lot? I think acting's very much the same way. You really have to trust your instincts. You know, I think you just kind of have to, you know, because I coach voiceover. I always tell my students, it's like, listen, you know, words are powered by emotion, not thought, I think acting's the same way. You gotta just kind of trust that you've done the work and you just kind of let it flow. But
yeah,
this is coming from somebody who's never played an instrument in my life, you know, so I've always wanted to learn how to play something, but I don't know if I'm at that stage where that even makes sense to even do it now, you know. But sixth grade I could play the recorder. We did have that music class in elementary, so You know, yeah. So I did have some ability to do something at one point.
Yeah, I'm sure you can pick that back up.
Curious, because you know, folks didn't hear, but we had a full technical setup, and your husband was actively involved, and that's so props to him. And I heard a British dialect. Did you meet him over in England, or did y'all connect over this side of the pond?
We met here in LA 12 years ago. We actually did a show together for Fox. He's an actor as well. The show lasted one season, but you know, our relationship has been syndicated, as we like to say.
but you negotiated a good deal on that one.
Yeah, we really did. Yeah, still raking in those residuals from that. We met on the show. I was cast on this comedy, and we could not find the male lead of it. I read with so many guys, nobody really felt right. And then at one of the network screen tests, Jack came in, and within, you know, 30 seconds of us reading together, it was very obvious that it was him. So we did the show, but adorably, you know, our showrunner officiated our wedding and was able to get the footage of our screen test from Fox, which is like, you know, you never really, though, that never sees the light of day. And so we were able to have footage of us, you know, 30 seconds after we met for the first time, which was...
Wait, when did y'all get married?
We got married in 2020.
Wait, so did y'all get married in Hawaii? What was this when you were doing Hawaii 5-0?
Well, I had just finished Hawaii 5-0. And of course the wedding was canceled because of COVID, and we ended up eloping in our treehouse. So we sort of kept that original date of our wedding.
This is getting more and more interesting. Okay, so you had a treehouse.
We had a treehouse. At our old house, we had this very very elaborate treehouse that was like two levels built into this beautiful eucalyptus tree that somebody who was like a very famous treehouse builder came and built it. And it was very, you know, it was built in a way that's respectful to the tree. And it was had like tiles on the ground. It was pretty magical. I miss that.
That is so good. Because even though we're adults, sometimes it's kind of fun just to like get away. And if the treehouse is the place you got to do it, well, that's kind of like you got to feel like you've gotten away from the world.
What you got to do. Yeah.
How old are your kids?
4.5 and 2.5.
Oh, they're still youngins. Okay.
Oh,
good,
yeah.
Good, good. So, but we've established you like Indian food, which is good. You know, that's.
Yeah. We're very lucky they eat everything. They're not picky eaters. Which is
they're not what I called with my kids. I had some friends, I called them chicken finger kids. You know, that's all they ate. My kids are like, just try it once. If you don't like it, you don't have to have it again. It's not like when I was a kid, my parents were like, you must eat this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's our point of view. We call them butter noodle kids.
Butter noodle.
You know, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. In the national dish in England, it's a chicken tikka masala, right? Isn't that kind of considered the national dish? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Colonialism. That's our imperialism. That brings all kinds of food back. You know,
it's but the best.
I'm just a kind of a food nerd. I end up talking food at least, you know, once
I
or twice
it.
Every show.
But happy to talk. But food.
Well, that's how I talked to Andrew Zimmern, and he was, you know, the bizarre foods. And we're Jewish kids, you know, so we're talking about Montreal. When he went there, he's like, "Oh, it's great food," you know.
Really is.
Hey, I'm Andy from the Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
The Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
Our show is pretty simple. Five lifelong friends competing on a single topic to see who gets bragging rights. Each episode, Nick, Scott, Brian, Kelly, and I battle through 10 questions on movies, music, science, history, sports, whatever we decide to throw in the blender for that week. Every episode stands on its own, so you can jump in wherever your curiosity takes you. And we don't just stop at right or wrong. We get into the backstory, the origins, the weird facts, and the stuff that has you saying, "How did I not know that already?" So download an episode, play along, keep score, and tell us how you do. See if you can beat the crew on the Ultimate Trivia Podcast.
The audacity, I mean, I'm looking at the cast of this show, and it looks like the most fun cast you know, how did that come to you? Was that like an audition, or was that somebody's like, hey, let's go grab Megan. She's perfect for this thing.
That was an audition. You know, I think I'm pretty sure that everybody had to read for the part. We all feel really good about that because it really does. It is something else to like earn it. And know that like you fought your way and like you did something that they connected with and felt was right. I was sent the script and I almost passed on the audition because I was like, this is a role I've never done before. There are lots of women who are very capable of doing this. I don't know that I'm that person. And it was sort of a big swing for me to do the audition, and I was scared to fail and almost passed. But I was like, there's no way I'm going to get this. But you know, decided to just work really hard on it. And somehow I got it. I can't believe it. I did a tape for it and then had a meeting with Jonathan Glatzer and Billy. And I read with Billy Magnuson, who is the lead.
Oh, he's such a cool kid. Yeah. I had a chance to chat with him. He's just, you know, he's funny. It's good. Cause he's so unattractive, you know, and that's the thing about Billy Magnuson. Yeah. He's rough to look at, you know,
no, like, no. Plus thank God for his personality.
I know. No, I was speaking with him. He was like, he played a Nazi officer. Then he was in James Bond. I'm like, there's one thing about this cast, Zach Galifianakis, looking at the cast and going, everybody there is just so spot on great when it comes to comedy, but they've been able to just nail in a very special way a lot of dramatic stuff. I mean, I'm looking forward to the show just because I'm like, how does everybody just kind of mesh together? Is it, do you know offhand how many episodes of the show are there?
Yeah, we did eight episodes.
Eight.
Really, I mean, I find that one of the most interesting elements of it, the fact that everybody's a comedy actor, and it's a drama, you know, and there's just naturally this levity and, you know, it's something different casting. Like, I'm thinking of Zach Galifianakis doing this role. He's like such an incredible dramatic actor, and it's wild to see him in this kind of part. Rob Corddry, like people you know for doing very funny things, are, you know, Rob is, everybody's playing it as a drama. And it was funny actually seeing the episodes and realizing, oh, wow, that's a lot funnier than I thought it would be. Or like, I didn't think this scene was going to be funny at all. And somehow it's hilarious.
You know, like I was telling Rama, it's like, listen, you know, the things he does, he can be like, think Hot Tub Time Machine. He can be the ridiculous guy. He can be playing these wonder, you know, he just nails it. But, and there are some films, like there's one he was in called The Donor Party with Malin Ackerman. I don't know if you ever saw that. Basically, you know, her goal was to be impregnated. That's the best way to put it. And it's all this absurdity going on, but he's the level-headed straight guy and amongst all this craziness. And like, so it was kind of a, you know, flip, but I just adore him. He's wonderful. But I want to know more about what you did as far as your, without giving too much away, what's this kind of the background, or who is your character, and how do you plug into the show or the cast rather?
Yeah, so I play Anushka Bhattacharya-Pfister, a really strong hyphenated name, as we all love on the show. She's the chief ethicist at what we're calling Cupertino. So you make your own conclusions about what that is.
Right.
it's sort of an interesting title to have in the tech world, an ethicist in a world that is like extremely corrupt. But she's somebody who, she's full of these contradictions. You know, it's so interesting because she's a person who, you know, values loyalty, but she's having an affair with Duncan, who Billy plays. She is an ethicist, but she ultimately sides with money and self-interest. So that's something that is, all these characters are incredibly nuanced and layered, which is something that was so, you know, exciting. That's all to Jonathan's credit. You know, he's an incredible writer.
I'm so excited to see it. And we were having a little Cupertino issue at the beginning of our
we
chat
were.
Today.
So it was... I know. But, embarrassingly enough, I had no idea how to solve it.
We're all good. No. Where did you shoot the show?
We shot it in Vancouver. And then we did a lot of the, well, I didn't go, but they did a lot of the exteriors in Silicon Valley. which we'll be doing again for season two.
The whole Silicon Valley thing is, I watched, I think I was watching Anthony Bourdain when he went to, I think it was San Francisco, and wherever he was, they're talking about the whole tech bro thing and how that changed the culture. It changed real estate. It just changed everything. And it's just, you're getting different people who, back when I was in school in the 80s and early 90s, talk about the geeks and the nerds and all that kind of stuff. Well, they run the world now, So how does that, it's ripe for really interesting stories, and that's,
Jonathan talks about this all the time. It's so strange because you have these people who are like socially incapable. They have infinite problems connecting to people, living in the present, seeing what's actually in front of them. And these are the people that are deciding how we live, how we, act on our phones, act in like relationships, act sexually with people. Like these are the people that are dictating it. These, men and women who are completely out of touch with actually how to do those things.
It's finally called social media, but in watching anybody seeing the movie The Social Network, you look, Mark Zuckerberg wasn't what you would call a very socially adept person, yet he's running this monolithic social thing, But what is your view on social media? I was talking to somebody yesterday about that if it wasn't really tethered to what it is, business-wise, we got to be plugged into social media. If it wasn't for that, I don't know if I'd mess with it, especially now. I don't think anybody gets off of a long session on the socials and feels really great about themselves, which I think is kind of ironic, What is your feeling about that? And do you feel that I'm just kind of throwing this as a random question. Do you think it's kind of changing a little bit where people are like, not as much. It's not as charming as it once was.
I mean, I'm hearing that the younger generation, like my friends who have slightly older kids than my own, obviously, but like they're really pushing back against social media. They want to be offline. They're not interested in it, which I think is really great. I mean, obviously I see the infinite dangers of it. I'm completely addicted myself. I mean, I'm only on Instagram, but like, I don't know what to tell you. At the end of the day, I can't even see anymore because like I've spent too much time staring at my phone.
My daughter, my 20 year old asked her, what, you've just been on the phone. What are you doing? Nothing. Well, you're doing something. What are you looking at? I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I'm like looking at different, I can see people's cooking. That's kind of cool. Or maybe, okay. I have to admit, you ever see those like fast forwarded 3D printing videos like this? Somebody's 3D printed something. That's kind of interesting. But
that
interesting. Now you said you're addicted to Instagram, but I got to know, are you looking at? What is your Instagram jam? What's the thing you're checking?
Out? My algorithm changes. It goes like there are moments where it's a lot of like parenting videos, but then it's like before and after plastic surgery videos and like cats. it's very vulnerable for somebody to see what your algorithm is, I think. But one thing that I learned on this show that I truly wasn't aware of, but learned through my character, is really what scares me the most is the amount of data we're giving to these people and information about ourselves and how they're using that. They're basically stealing our information to sell it back to us. And it's so dark and so scary when you think about actually how much they know about us. Like our fridge knows about us, our TV knows about us, our electric toothbrush knows about us, our scale.
All they have to hire is some really good psychologist, and you have all this seemingly bits and pieces of unrelated data. They could train an AI, which I'm sure they've already done this, to pull all of it together and figure you out.
100%.
They know, predictively.
I surf the internet very differently than I did before. And I would just press like accept all cookies, accept. What is a cookie? I don't even know. but now it's very important that you choose essential only. Just as a warning to everybody.
What's scary for me, I'll talk about when I say something random, like really random, and then I'll see an ad for it. I'm like, something's listening to me. I know.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's worried about the NSA and the government. I'm like, no, Cupertino. Or whoever. I mean, but what you said about the kids, I will say for the most part, I don't see that my kids 23, 21 and 20, they're not as into it. You know, back, you know, my daughter will just kind of scroll through Instagram. You're right that I've heard that they like more. You know what it is? I think it's authenticity. I think authenticity turns them on because everything's been manufactured. It's been produced. But you'll also see commercials trying to make themselves look like YouTube commercials now, like real. Yeah. So they're trying to almost imitate that thing, which seems real. And I think we're not going through a change necessarily, but it's good to have a generation who they want to meet in person, or as they say, IRL, as opposed to online dating apps and all that.
Yeah, that's very heartening to hear. There's, you know, that there's some hope.
Yeah, it's like whenever somebody meet, you know, and how'd y'all meet? Oh, we were some in-person story. I'm like, oh, you didn't meet online. Well, good for you. You know, that kind of thing. What did you learn doing this show? You know, because it is tech-based. Was there any kind of epiphanies you had? You know, I'm sure the creators had kind of did their due diligence on learning, you know, some stuff about the industry, as it were. Did you learn anything you didn't know previously about the
I was saying, really just about the privacy and the information that we give away so willingly, and actually the value that that holds for them to know everything about us. Like you were talking about, you know, when you realize your phone's been listening to you because they sent you an ad. Like, I think by the time it gets to that point, like, they know that's nothing to them. It's truly dark and terrifying what they know. And so it's, again, like, it's definitely changed the way that I look at things online and what I choose to give. You know, so many times it's like, I just want to see the site. I just press accept. I just want to see what's under there. It's like, our attention span is so short now too. I have no patience.
And even the way they design it, they make a big, big banner where you can't see beyond. It's like a fence. Like, you can't see what's on the other side. So you got to click. Yeah. So everything is so psychologically tweaked. But I real quick, I don't really like the research, you know, but I just accidentally saw something. Did you believe, or was your childhood home haunted? Was it? I don't know where I saw that. I was like, I don't even know how I saw that. I was like, well, I'm going to ask her about that. That seems.
Yeah. Yes, I do believe it was haunted. I do still think about this a lot. I know that there was a grave in the backyard. I was very young when we moved. There was a grave in the backyard.
A grave in the backyard.
Yes. Wow. And then while I lived there, we must have moved out of that house when I was like 4 or 5. I was super young. Mm-hmm. And the only things that I remember about the house were that I would get these flashes of the surreal, like, just snippets of, like, this is terrifying. A woman with long nails pulling a rope and the little strings on the rope coming up.
Oh, did you talk about it with your parents?
Talked about it with my therapist. I did. But I don't know what my parents didn't know what to make of it, you know. But I do know that they believe me. But when we moved out of the house, I never had those flashes again.
Well, that's just crazy though. I mean, when you say somebody was buried, was it like legit, like headstone and everything? Or you just knew somebody had been buried out there at some point?
There was a headstone.
Oh, so it's like a grave. Wow. Going and playing in the backyard, a whole different thing. That's why you like being up in the treehouse.
Yeah. I'm thinking now, is that legal? Can you just bury someone in the backyard?
That's what I'm trying to process. I didn't know if it's like, okay, you can't really move the grave. This is like Poltergeist-like, you know. I don't know if you remember the Poltergeist movie, but
I do.
Well, they said they moved the bodies, but they didn't, you know. Anyway, that's all. But no, you knew. That's crazy. It's like, I can't imagine going to backyard and how you integrate that into your play as a kid in the backyard. You know, there's a headstone. That's something you're the first person I've ever met that can attest to that. Now, being from Texas, I know people have like ranches where they have a little burial area for the family, you know, like way off somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
But as far as the different genres of work you've done, is there something that you feel a stronger pull to? Because like Hawaii Five-0 is like really physical, like type of gig for you. Did you like that? Do you like the comedic thing? Is there anything that pulls you a little bit more than the other?
You know, I've always loved to switch it up. And I feel really lucky that I've had that opportunity to go, you know, one show I'm doing a drama and then I'm doing comedy. And then I sort of get the itch for drama again. And I love being able to change in that way. And I feel very lucky that people see me in both ways. But I especially love when I can combine the two. I think this show is so, it's so special in the way that it does ride the line between comedy and drama. It's a satire. And so this has been really exciting, especially doing something, this kind of character that I've never done before. It really feels terrifying and but new well, and do fresh.
You, but see, that's awesome. Sometimes I think things that terrify you can kind of like be fun. You know, if you're not doing the same thing, you're not hitting repeat, rinse and repeat on something you've already done, you know?
Yeah.
But what haven't you done that you're like, okay, that's on the bucket list. I need to work with this person, work within this genre. Maybe it's directing or something. What's out there that you haven't done, or maybe you've done, you'd love to do again?
Oh my God. I have so much. I mean, there's so many people I'd love to work with, and that's, you know, I think on this show, I was experiencing a lot of that because this cast is so incredible. And also to have the opportunity to perform the kind of material that Jonathan writes, this kind of dialogue, it's so dense. He writes massive monologues for these characters. And it's a challenge to, you know, first of all, just memorize it, to get in your head. And he's constantly rewriting. So it's always changing.
Really?
And you can't really.
Oh, so you go into your trailer and you have a new color of script sitting on your thing. Oh,
yeah, wow. Or you know, you get it at 12 o'clock the night before he's rewritten your entire monologue. Like, you don't.
See, that
have,
would scare me.
It is because you can't wait. You can't. You sometimes you would be like, well, I'm just going to wait till the last draft and then I'll memorize that. But you can't do that because it's so specific. It's so dense. It's like, especially, you know, this character, I'm doing an accent. I need to get it in my mouth. I need to get it into my body. And so you just kind of have to start working on it the moment you get it and just know that like it's going to change. But if you can absorb what the message is, it makes it easier to
Now you have to tell me what accent you're doing. What's your nationality in the show?
Anushka is British Indian, so I'm doing an English accent.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did the husband make fun of your dialect? Did he give you a hard time about it? Or
No, he didn't make fun of it, but I feel very lucky that I was able to have him on hand too. I worked with a dialect coach, but while we were shooting, you know, I had him on the phone, especially with the rewrites, being like, how does this sound? Is this, how do you say, how would you say this? You know, but my husband's also been in America for, I mean, over 20 years at this point. So his accents changed quite a bit. And so when I was auditioning during the process, I sort of based the accent on his sisters who,
really?
You know, one of his sisters still lives in the UK, went to Oxford, which is where my character went. So it was exactly the right sound. So mostly my accent is modeled on her, but it is, you know, it was easy to slip into it because I have been making fun of my husband for 12 years. So it's easy to be like,
well,
hey,
you know,
I can
crazy.
Do
like Alex McLaughlin, you know, like the Australians, they can nail the American dialect easily. But they have the hardest dialect there's a rhythm to the Australian and New Zealand kind of a thing, you know? But I could never do that dialect. I think English, British is way easier than Australian.
Plus, Australians also so hard.
Plus, they have nicknames and they like to shorten things up to the, you know, I don't know if Beulah Qualley did that, but they like to shorten things up.
Beulah's accent. It's so great. I love it. I cannot imitate it. I mean, he'll be like, hey, Meeks. Hey, Meeks. That's like what he always says. Yeah. Like it's so charming. I could never do it though.
Yeah, here on the island, I have a friend who's from Australia, and he, instead of coming over for a barbecue, they call it a sausage sizzle. You know, they have just different ways of saying stuff down there, and I was always quite enamored with it. You know. Now we're talking food. I'm hungry, but you know, actually that brings me to the, to what I call my seven questions. I always kind of bring it out the towards the tail end of our chat, a little extra get to know you. And the first question I always ask is, what is your favorite comfort food? You know, good day, bad day. It always just lands for you.
Oh, ramen.
We know it's not spam musubi, but we're not going to hold it.
No, it's I'm obsessed with ramen. I could really have it every day of my life, and it's that would be a mistake.
Like real deal ramen.
Yeah,
no, real deal ramen. The stuff in the grocery store.
No, real deal ramen. It's my absolute favorite. It would be my last meal. It destroys my stomach. You know, every time I eat it, I am in pain after.
Really?
But I like it really spicy. I like it really spicy.
Oh.
Yeah, it needs to hurt when it's going down.
Wow. Okay.
You got to make it worth it.
When you get the good stuff, like, you know, they made a fresh broth and yeah.
Oh yeah. I have my spot in LA that we order from all the time. Silver Lake Ramen. It's the best. It's just the best.
Really? Do they do a thing like they have the egg on top and everything?
Oh,
and
yeah.
The whole, like, you know,
they got the egg.
Until I haven't had lunch yet. I haven't had lunch. We tried it. There's a wonderful little Asian place in the island, but they're kind of a little bit of everything, Korean and, you know, it's passable across every kind of, but it's like, it's not awesome like the great ramen or great sushi or Korean or something. So yeah, I shouldn't do these chats before lunch because I'm sitting around. I had to mute my mic. My stomach was growling a second ago. I was like, that's embarrassing. But now the next question I have for you, if you're going to sit down and talk story for, I don't know, an afternoon, an evening, you know, sitting down for coffee with three people, living or not, who would those three people be you would love to sit down and chat with?
Oh my God, that is so hard. That's such a hard question. You know, now he's at the top of mind right now, but Beulah Kowale, I haven't seen him in years. He's a brother to me. We can talk and talk and talk and laugh for hours, and I miss him so much. I would love to sit down and talk to him.
He's such a cool dude. And folks listening, go back. Check out the episode. He's a sweetheart of a guy, and run it straight, I think was a phrase I got from him. Run it straight.
That's his catchphrase. Yeah. Love a man with a catchphrase. he would be up there. Oh my God. I mean, this is so hard to say. I'm going living or dead. That just seems like I'm not really drawing from what I could be, but I'm thinking now of like my old friends, one of my old friends from Montreal, Laurence Leboeuf, who's like, we worked together when we were kids. And she's the kind of person that you sit down with and like you haven't seen in years and you can just talk for hours. Same as Beulah. I would love to talk to her. And, you know, I'm going for lunch after this with Lucy Punch, who's on our show as well. And she's a great hilarious woman.
Oh, my God. Someone to marry Barry. They're trying to marry off their friend who's just a train wreck of a guy. You know, go watch it. There is a scene. You can even say, hey, I was talking to this guy. There's a scene with the two of them. He's driving. She's in the passenger seat. And it's a little crass, I will say that, but that's kind of but she is so great. She could, you know, I didn't even know, you know, she does the dialect thing, really the American dialect just fine.
She does, but
just ask her about that. Like there's this guy that thinks one of the funniest scenes he's seen in a movie is when you and Tyler Labine are in the front seat of it was crass,
another
but it was,
Canadian.
I literally, one of those ones I rewound and I'm like, I was almost crying. I was laughing so hard because it's just so bad. It was just so
she
bad.
And she's fantastic on our show too. She's also, it's funny because she's playing American, I'm playing British, so we've like switched accents. She is so funny on this show. I just like, I was such a fan of hers before I even met her, and she's like as delightful as you can imagine.
I think she's just fantastic. She's fantastic. Yeah. Now the next question, if you're to look back excuse me, when you were a youngin, I don't know, you know, middle school, high school, your first celebrity crush when you were a kid, who was that?
Okay. I can't remember which came first, if it was John Travolta or of course Jonathan Taylor Thomas, who was
Jonathan Taylor Thomas was, he's come up a number of times, but John Travolta, you know, that's, I'm sorry.
I'm surprised. I'm not surprised that John Travolta has not come up, especially like when you think of a young girl and who she
But John, he's just such a cool guy across. Plus, he can fly planes. I mean, you know, you think about it, that scene from Saturday Night Fever, just carrying the paint cans, you know, just like this guy was cool across the board. You know, he should come out more. But Jonathan Taylor Thomas is, for a specific age range, he's just the guy for ladies, you know.
He was the guy. I was so deeply obsessed with it. He's like woven into the fabric of my childhood.
That's I'm feeling old now. So the next question I got for you, if you're going to live on an exotic island, somewhere you really want to be, it's really beautiful, it's awesome, but there's no streaming. So you're going to be there for a full year and you're only allowed to bring one DVD. If you want to watch a movie, kind of over and over again. And the same thing with a CD. I'll even say a box set. What would that CD or box set be? And what would that DVD be that would be your only source of digital entertainment, we'll call it that, while you're on the island?
Okay, this is a great question. CD, wow, that's tough. Music is tough. I think for a box set, I mean, can it be television as well?
You know what? I think that's a good one. You can do a box set, like you can do like a series, you know, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think for a series, it would be The Comeback, Lisa Kudrow. I watch that series once a year and have since it's come out. I love her. I'm so happy there's a new season out right now. For movies, it's funny. I would do this growing up. I would choose a movie over, you know, the summer, and I would watch the same movie every single day.
I'm curious though, when you were young, like what were one or two of those movies that were just like your jam?
Yeah, one of them was American Beauty. That was a big one. I watched that every single day. I actually recently rewatched it on a plane and I was like still sort of rattled by it.
You know, watching it like when you're young and watching it as an adult, it's great when you watch things and you see it through a different angle on the prism. You know what I mean? It's like, well, that's not really healthy.
I know. Also watching that as a child too. Another one was 500 Days of Summer. That was a big one for me. Yeah, watched that constantly. I watched Bring It On a lot, which I have to say does not hold up.
Some of them don't. But you know, one, I talked to somebody about this yesterday. Every time I watch it, I just got to finish watching it. Like if it just happens to be on, I got to Lost in Translation.
I also would say the Kill Bill series of movies. I would watch that over and over. I'd bring that.
What would the music? What would the music be for you? Like where are you at on music?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, my taste is very eclectic. I constantly have like playlists going, which is, you know, obviously a mix of everything. If I couldn't bring one of my playlists, maybe.
Well, you know, that's a really good point. Playlists are kind of like where we're at now. That's kind of fun though. We could do it's our mixtape, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's, I like when I care about someone, I will make them a mixtape. I will make them a playlist. And I feel like it's so personal. It's like giving a part of yourself.
Because you're saying, this is how I see you. And this is how I want you to see me. You
know, exactly,
this is what I want you to see about me. So I'll tell you what, we'll do this. You know, maybe I can refine this and say, what are a few of the songs on that mixtape? What that island mixtape you've got?
Ooh. Okay, let me look at my let me look at one of my playlists right now. Yes, of course they change so much. There's this band called Broncho, which I had never heard of until recently, which I really, really am into, and now are on every playlist that I make. I think a classic, and do you know that I make playlists for every part that I do? So every show that I'm on, I always have one of those. You know what I love? I love a band called Shannon and the Clams. That's on every playlist that I make. Dr. Dog is like a huge band that I listened to growing up for me and my brother, very special for the two of us.
Dr. Dog. I'm so happy. I was talking to somebody yesterday and they're giving me bands I've never heard of. I love this because it gives me, I think it's a wonderful insight. I talked to Jordan Bridges, you know, like Bo Bridges' son, great actor. Yeah. You know, his whole thing is he loves making playlists. And that's one of the things you reminded me. I wanted to do with my guests is like, I want to get a playlist and post that with your info. Like, this is one of the playlists. What great insight. I also should do that because
I also love like when they used to do this on Apple Music, like they would have like a celebrity playlist. And I always found that so interesting because I would learn about music that way. But also I'm so curious about like the people that I admire, look up to, whose work I love. I love to know what they're listening to. Because I do feel it's very
revealing. You know what? I would love to do that. Because when I listen to plays like that's tremendous insight it opens up your eyes to something different. Like the bands you just mentioned, never heard of. I'm like, that first thing I'm going to do when I go pick up my daughter, I'm going to load up Spotify and I'm going to load those songs.
I love that. That makes me so happy.
Well, that's awesome. Well, the next question I got for you, if you were to say like the recipe for a perfect day, time you wake up, time you go to bed, if these elements were part of that day, it was a perfect day for you, what would that be?
Oh. Okay. Well, I love a sunny day. I mean, in Los Angeles, we have a lot of those, but I know what it, by comparison.
I can tell we have a big one today. It's like, you know, the beach is right there and we've got this, I'm getting blasted.
I love that. I think, you know, it makes me think of the days that I would have off in Hawaii, you know, walking on the beach. There's something that the ocean does to me when I go in. I really do feel like it's a reset for my body. It's like, I know a lot of people feel that way. I love the ocean. If I can float in salt water, I feel so good. There's something really spiritual about that.
It's elemental. I think that, and it's elemental. It's where we came from, if you think about it. You know, so the elements are all there. It's kind of like it's all the stuff going on in life just kind of puts pause for a moment and just kind of lets you be.
It really does quiet everything. And I would do that so often while I was filming there. I would just go. That would be the first thing that I did every time I got back to the island. I would go in the ocean. So definitely that's an element that has to be present. I think a foot massage is like, there's no greater feeling on earth, I think, or a head massage. Huge fan of that. I think a really good meal, some sushi or of course ramen would make me so happy. And then like, there really is nothing quite like knowing that you have a new episode of a show that you're really into that's coming out that night. When I have something to watch, when I'm reminded that I have a new episode of something that I love that night, it's like, it gives me something to live for. Let's be honest.
Okay. Let's be honest. In the year 2026, isn't it great when you know you have a whole season you can watch because you know you're gonna power through it. I just now caught up with Homeland. I never watched it when it came out with Claire Danes. Really wild time to be watching it now with everything going on in the world, you know.
Right.
It's very relevant. But Mandy Patinkin's just so great and Claire Danes. I don't know. I caught it 14, 15 years too late. I'm not going to tell you how many seasons I've watched and what span of time. It would be very embarrassing. But
listen, I do the same kind of thing.
So it would be a great show to watch. And how would you wrap? What would be the last thing on that day that would just be the bookend that would be perfect?
I mean, I love like a great candle and like getting into bed and the sheets are warm and like an early night. Knowing that I'm going to sleep really well without any interruptions. I mean, obviously that's very, what's fresh in my mind is, you know, I have small kids and so it's not often that we have a night without any sort of disturbance.
Oh, no. I remember those days. Those days where, you know, there's one day the kids are maybe at the grandparents and like right now I'm looking forward to Sunday because I can sleep in. I'm looking forward to this one day I know I can sleep in.
I can't wait till I can sleep in one day. You know, like now sleeping till 8 would be like a dream. But there's nothing like the terror of knowing you're in for a bad night. Like if you've started off the night with someone's thrown up, you just know what you're in for. And it's just like, it gives me such anxiety. So just the feeling of knowing that I'm going to sleep 100% without being disturbed, I can't think of anything better right now.
That is nirvana. I sympathize. I was there with three kids and all three of mine were in diapers at the same time. And I was a single dad.
Oh my God.
And I was like, so it was,
you hero. You're a single dad. You hero. That is so hard.
But I lucked out. I got three rock stars. So I, you know, I'm, they run the show. They're so much smarter than me, which is,
do you have girls? You know.
I got my oldest daughter's 23, Lily. My son Zachary is 21, and my daughter Emma, who lives on the island with me right now, she is 20. You know, well, she goes to school in Florida, but she dropped her one in person class just so she could do it all online. She's a COVID kid, so the online thing for her is just normal, you know.
Yeah.
But they all, she's graduating a year early. I'm like, I'm embarrassed by like how much smarter than I than me they are.
You did something right.
There was something in the water. You know, I got lucky. But last couple of questions. If this wasn't available to you, like your gig, this creative theatrical stuff, it just wasn't on the agenda, what would be career or vocation number two? What would be the backup? Not backup, but what would be the other thing that would bring you joy?
I mean, I don't think that nothing that isn't creative would bring me joy. It would have to be something in the arts. You know, I still paint now, and there really is something
When I say creative, I mean like, film and TV. If film and TV wasn't available for you, what would be the other, let's say, creative thing that you would do?
Like as a job?
Yeah. What would be your vocation? Right.
I love taking pictures. Actually, when I was filming 5-0, Scott Kahn introduced me to shooting on film.
Oh, yeah.
And so he actually got me my first film camera. And actually, look at that.
He's come out with a couple of like books.
Oh, yeah. And he's given me all of them. So that photo actually right there, this is my husband's office, but that's Shai McBride. I took that photo of him on film in Hawaii.
Oh.
But what was so incredible was, so Scotty gave me my first film camera, and I was able to learn from all the crew, all these incredible cameramen, how to use it. And I'll never forget it. I feel like I was like being taught by like, you know, the greats and these incredible DPs and camera operators who know exactly what they're doing with it. And so like,
Have you posted any of this stuff? Like, do you have a website or anywhere people could go and like check out your work? Megan, you got to get those pictures out.
There's still time, though.
But I tell you what, you come out with a book, I promise you, I'll be book number one. I'll purchase.
Oh my God! Okay, well that's a deal.
Well, the last question I got for you, if you had that DeLorean, you could jump in and you got to go back when you're 16 years old. You got a few minutes with 16-year-old you. Piece of advice for that moment to make it a little bit better, or maybe get you on a little bit different trajectory. What would that piece of advice be for 16-year-old you?
You know, I don't know that I would change the trajectory, because I think that everything that's happened has led me here, and I, everything that I have gone through, everything that I worked on was extremely valuable, and like I needed to learn all those things. But I would say, you know, when I was 16, I didn't know who I was. I had a lot of insecurities, and I think I would just say, you know, like the thing that you're scared of, the thing that you don't like about yourself is kind of what makes you special. So to just sort of hold on to that a little bit.
Really embrace who you are and just kind of go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would have made things a bit easier for me.
Very good. Very well, Megan, thank you so much for spending time with me today. This was a pure joy, and I've really just a real pleasure, and I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Mark. Yeah, you're so great.
Well, thank you so much. Seriously, I've enjoyed it, and I'm glad. It's always fun when I can scratch that Hawaii 5-0 itch. You know, I'd love to talk to Scott Kahn at some point in time. Real interesting guy. But you and Beulah, you know, y'all are dynamic duos. So this has been y'all have given me kind of a bookend, if you will, of the Hawaii 5-0 experience.
Listen, I'm always happy to talk about it. I love it. I love that show.
I was going to say, I was going to think about you next time I make spam musubi for the kids, but that's not going to happen. Did you at least like Loco Moco?
I don't even remember what that is. Tell me what that is again.
Oh, it's just, you know, rice, and they put a hamburger steak on top, gravy, and
No, yes, of course I love that. How could I not? I mean, that's, I did. And I did love truly all of their food. I mean, I would happily live there and spend the rest of my days eating that stuff now.
Well, I appreciate you spending some time with me. Go enjoy a good bowl of ramen over the weekend, tell your husband, give him a hug.
No, I will.
Tell him thank you for being our technical engineer. I appreciate it greatly. But have a wonderful weekend, Megan, and hopefully we'll catch up down the line.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, there you go. Megan Rath. What a cool conversation. I enjoyed sitting down with her. And of course, this is an episode my kids might actually listen to because they loved Hawaii Five-0. And Megan was a big part of that, of course. And the new show is called The Audacity. It is on AMC, and it features Rob Corddry, who we just spoke with, and just an amazing cast as well, including Billy Magnuson, who I mentioned earlier we spoke with, going back almost exactly 4 years ago, April 26th, 2022. And of course, we talked about Beulah Quale, very cool dude. He was an episode literally right before Billy Magnuson's episode, and that's, I believe, on the 19th of April, 2022. Holy cow, has it been 4 years? Oh my gosh, time flies. Now, do me a favor, don't forget to pull up your podcast app. We're on all the podcast apps. Make sure to like it. Make sure to follow. Leave a comment. You get notified when a new episode comes out. You help folks to find the show, and doggone it, I appreciate that greatly. Everything about the show, you can check out storyandcraftpod.com. Past guests, past episodes, it's all right there. And again, on all your podcast apps, as well as Substack, you can check out storyandcraft.substack.com. And do that, and you get an email every time a new episode comes out. Okay, so I'm going to jump on out of here. I want you to have an amazing day. As I always say, thank you very much. It does mean a lot to me that you make what I got going on here part of what you've got going on. Great episodes to come. Join me here shortly. Just a few days from now, we'll get back together and stir up a proper bit of mischief. But go have a great day. We'll get together again very soon right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story. Come on.